Welcome to the Mornings with Sue and Andy podcast for Friday, April 19th. We begin with our weekly conversation with Mayor Jyoti Gondek. This time out, we tackle the controversial topic of rezoning in the city ahead of Monday's public hearing. And we discuss the new Calgary slogan, Blue Sky City, released earlier this week.
Next, we continue the conversation surrounding the proposed citywide rezoning plan. How much do you actually know about the plan and how it will impact your neighborhood? We get some clarification to the many questions surrounding the topic with Joe Mueller, Manager of Regional Planning and Development with the City of Calgary.
And finally, the initial Russian invasion of Ukraine took place over 2 years ago, and the conflict continues with no clear end in sight. We get the latest on the war with Andrew Rasoulis, a fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute and an expert in Eastern European affairs.
Coffee.
Check.
Toast.
Check.
Sue and Andy on the radio.
Check. Mornings with Sue and Andy on QR Calgary.
Talk on FM 107.3 QR Calgary.
Smiling at me. At 8:07, nothing but blue skies from now on. That is a little Willie Nelson for you this morning, and a major rebranding for the City of Calgary, as we found out yesterday. We are now Blue Sky City. Joining us, Calgary Mayor Jyoti Gondek, back this morning to talk about all things related to our fine city. Good morning, Madam Mayor.
Good morning, Sue and Andy. How are you?
Good, thank you. Curious your thoughts on this new slogan, Blue Sky City. It's been developed over the past 4 years to the tune of nearly $5 million by Tourism Calgary and Calgary Economic Development. Curious if you think it represents the City of Calgary well.
I had the opportunity to be at the Calgary Economic Development Report to Community the other day, and people were telling their stories, and it was absolutely beautiful and so compelling. Folks that moved here, you know, a few decades ago, folks that moved here a couple of years ago, everybody had the same thing to say, that this is a city of opportunity. It's a city that has welcomed them, and they are proud to call this place home, and it's blue skies all day. Really, really encouraging messaging from the community.
Fantastic. Yes. As far as I'm concerned, we got to refresh these things every number of years. And I don't have a better suggestion, so I'm going with it, man. Sounds good to me. All right. Let's talk about the big public hearing on Monday. Before we get into some of the details, is this just people creating folklore when they say it could be the biggest public hearing in the city's history? Are you hearing the same, Madam Mayor?
Well, I think for the nerds that are city council buffs, they're getting quite excited about the fact that this will be record setting. It does have the possibility. There's about 670 people registered right now. And if all of them come to speak with us, it will be the largest public hearing we've had. But I think the most important thing to remember is we're trying to address a housing crisis. And this is one way that we could address that crisis. And we are very interested in hearing from Calgarians. We will run as long as we need to make sure everyone's voice is heard.
And so I know that the written submission part is closed, but people can come to the meeting itself or send in their questions to the rezoning meeting?
People can come either in person or on the phone and make a presentation. Everyone has the opportunity to speak to council for 5 minutes. We do assemble people in panels, and so you have a bit of an idea of when your turn might be coming. We don't take questions submitted over email, but we absolutely will continue to take any submissions that the registered speakers have to bring with them. So that's a motion that we make on the day that we start the meeting. If someone has something they want on the corporate record when they're presenting, we will certainly accept it.
Madam Mayor, why do you think Calgarians are so fired up? Why do you think Calgarians want to engage so much on this particular topic?
That's a great question, and I think there's several reasons. For the folks that are incredibly supportive, they want to make sure that we've got strong housing options in our city. They want to make sure that relative affordability is something that's a reality in neighborhoods. They want to make sure that for all the people that are in our city right now struggling to find housing, that we are opening up more supply. And for the 60 plus people that are coming here every day, we want to make sure that we've got strong housing solutions for them. And for the folks that are concerned about this, I think it is change. And I think change is something that people grapple with. And I'm really hoping that we can provide some clarification for the things they're concerned about. And I really want to hear what it is that worries them and make sure that we make the right decision according to how people are thinking and feeling.
I think that's the thing, Mayor. I think there are a lot of people who maybe just aren't clear on the details, and hopefully Monday's public meeting will bring some of that into clarity for a lot of people. But I think people are worried about what's going to happen to their community, right? We can all understand that those who own a home are concerned. So, I mean, can you speak to the fact that I hear, you know, this is going to make my neighborhood a slum and that these houses are just going to be slapped up and they're poorly made too. Those things cannot be reality.
No, and there's also this misperception that somehow with rezoning, the city will come in and, you know, knock homes down and put things up that you're not expecting. As a matter of fact, one of the things that administration is recommending is that if this rezoning goes through, that the public has the opportunity to see the development permit and to weigh in on it. And this has been the age-old issue we've had. When we have public hearings on land use, you can't talk about the built form because that's not what's before us. With what's being proposed next week, the public has the opportunity to get their eyes on the development permit and see what it is that's going to be built across the street, next door, down the street. They can weigh in on it. So it's actually opening up the door to the thing that people really want to see, and that is, what's it going to look like?
Big questions and answers will be hopefully found in no time. Let's wrap this up. Let's make sure that everybody has a roof over their head. That's my stance anyway, Madam Mayor. And Monday, all eyes on Monday. We were told earlier that we can watch it on calgary.ca following the links. Thanks, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you. That is Calgary Mayor Jyoti Gondek.
We know you have questions about the proposed rezoning plan that Calgary City Council has put forward. Calgarians can have their voices heard during public hearings that start on Monday. So many people have so many questions about how these changes could impact us and the community we live in. So we're going to try and get some answers for you this morning. Joining us to discuss is Joe Mueller, who's manager of Regional Planning and Development Services with the City of Calgary. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, everyone.
Let's start with this blanket term, blanket rezoning. Was that something the city put forward? Where did that come from? Because I think that's really kind of started a lot of the misconceptions that are even surrounding this discussion.
Yes, the citywide rezoning is a result of a couple of things. One is the Calgary Council put together a housing affordability task force over a year ago, and they came up with recommendations that then informed the city's Home is Here housing strategy. And in that strategy, one of the recommendations that both that task force and the strategy proposed was to create a new base zone across the entire city, so citywide rezoning to the base residential district of RCG, which allows single, detached, semi-detached row houses and townhouses and secondary suites on all low-density residential parcels.
Well, here's a question from Carmen. Well, actually, I'll give you a couple here. Carmen says, I do not understand why the rezoning has to be for the entire city. Why can't the city try this out for a year or so? I'm worried this will be another instance where the city bites off more than they can chew. That's from Carmen. What do you say to that, Joe?
Yeah, that's something we have heard quite often in our conversations with Calgarians. We have been using this district for 10 years. It was introduced in 2014, the RCG district. And the RG district was introduced in 2016. The RG district is already widely in use in new communities. So we have experience with both of these districts on the ground. And we have been doing this through local area plans, talking with communities for years. There is a housing crisis that many cities in Calgary in Canada are experiencing. So we need to take more action now. And the citywide rezoning creates an equal opportunity across the entire city and removes many of the pressure points that some communities are experiencing today.
There is a lot of concern about what that might look like in particular neighborhoods. So, I mean, how do you respond to that in terms of, you know, people are concerned, the bottom line is people are concerned it's going to bring down the value of their own home.
Yes, we see no evidence of a loss of property value because a home is next to a new infill row house or townhouse. Our city data does not support that concern. And it's understandable that people love their communities and everyone is hesitant to see change. these new homes, they're all basically the same size as current new infill homes. So a single detached or a semi-detached home is more similar in scale to these row houses and townhouses than they are different. And it's really important for us to ensure Calgarians that all of these homes, they all have front doors to the street. They are not apartment buildings. They are not buildings with interior hallways and elevators. They're all more similar to what we see already happening today with new single detached or semi-detached infills.
This question, I've got a whole bunch, and we've had in the conversation a whole bunch, so I'm kind of lumping them together. Parking. Joe, people are concerned about parking for a couple reasons. The street parking, if there's multiple residents now on one plot compared to just a single family dwelling, first of all, and it enters the conversation because it's where we are technologically. For EVs, you'll need a place to plug in. Can you give us a kind of a broad strokes, explanation of how parking would be dealt with this new plan?
Yeah, absolutely. Parking is a huge concern to many people. And while there are some areas in the city today that already have parking issues, in general, there's ample supply of on-street parking throughout the entire city. Calgary has always been a city of growth, and with more people, there will probably also be more cars. And I'm sure people have seen this over the years already as more people, more cars come into a community. Generally, people have more cars than parking on their properties already today. We have never, as a city, required a single detached home to provide more than one parking stall. Sometimes people build two garages, have a double car garage, but very often people choose to park on the street, or they just have more vehicles than they can accommodate on their private property. This is no change to that. So as Calgary continues to grow, there may be more competition for on-street parking. The city has tools if it does become an issue in an area to mitigate the problem. Residential parking restrictions is one, but also we work together with the home builder to encourage them to provide options or encourage different mobility options. So better storage for bicycles, for example, and also with more people, that means there's a bigger customer base for the city to be able to provide attractive transit. You also asked about electric vehicles and the issues that may arise there. And yes, of course, if people purchase electric vehicles, they would like usually to charge them in their garages or on their property, and that may require upgrades to their home power system. And we are working with NMAX, our power supplier, to look at the future demands of residential areas as more and more EVs come. The uptake of EVs is still relatively slow, however, so that's a very incremental change over time.
I think there'll be a lot of talk about parking because I'm not sure everybody thinks that there's enough already, and this I think it is going to add to the issue, but that's to be debated certainly at these live sessions come Monday. So, Joe, just don't have time for any more than a yes or no from you if you could, but will the sessions be live or somehow that people can listen to the presentations even if they're not in attendance on Monday?
Yes, they are live, and they're also online, and people can tune in online and watch online.
Just through calgary.ca?
Calgary.ca, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for answering questions.
Thank you.
Thanks. Joe Mueller is Manager of Regional Planning and Development Services with the City of Calgary.
Well, Poland has arrested a man suspected of spying for Russia and aiding in an assassination attempt on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. We're going to discuss the latest on the war in Eastern Europe, which has been going on now for well over 2 years. Of course, we are very happy to have Andrew Rasulis on anytime we have the opportunity, fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute and an expert in Eastern European affairs. Good morning to you and welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Sue and Andy.
Well, the Russia-Ukraine war was in focus during the G7 leaders meeting this week. What are world leaders doing to ensure Ukraine is able to continue to stand up to Russian forces, Andrew?
So the main effect both now of the Ukrainians themselves and of their Western supporters, like at the G7 meeting, is to try to keep Ukraine in the fight. Russia has the offensive momentum now. They've had it for some time. Ukrainians can only hope to defend, certainly in 2024, and then see what happens in 2025. So it's all about survival and defense. And that's what everything's about now. And the Russians, Ukrainians are stating publicly they're expecting a major Russian offensive in June. It could be in the Luhansk area, Donbass, or it could be in Kharkiv, or it could be in both. But that's what's in play right now.
Andrew, I mean, where are we when we look on the ground? There have been so many lives lost in this battle, and it sounds like Ukraine downing a strategic bomber for the first time. There have been major attacks on either side. Is anybody sort of, you know, gaining the upper hand here?
Russia has the upper hand. So Russia has had the upper hand now for, you can say, several months. Every day. There are reports of the Russians moving westward, very small. They move, you know, a few kilometers here, in a village there. It's not something that you're getting on your front page news, but in the sort of detailed reporting that I'm reading, every day there are reports that the Russians are advancing and the Ukrainians are fighting defensive battles. And that's why what I was saying is that strategically speaking, Ukraine is on the defense in 2024. There is no prospect of a Ukrainian offensive operation. They don't have the strength. They don't have the people. And that's really the bottom line. We all talk about the equipment. That's all important. And the Americans are going to vote on Saturday to see if they're going to release their funding for Ukraine. That will, if it comes through, that will help the defense. But the Ukrainians lack the people power, the soldiers in the army. They need 500,000 more, and they're not going to get that. And without that, they can't launch that major offensive against the Russian forces in Ukraine.
Interesting. Spending some time this morning with Andrew Rasulis, fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute and an expert in Eastern European affairs. And Andrew, the BBC is reporting 50,000 Russian soldiers have been killed in the war to this point. Do we know how many have been killed in Ukraine? I guess civilians included in the number. And how reliable are these numbers anyway that we have been hearing over the past couple of years?
They're not very reliable. We don't have, if I was writing an essay on this or a book, I would not quote any of those figures. We just know it depends on who you're talking, deaths or casualties, but it's in the hundreds of thousands from both sides. Zelensky said they've had 30,000 killed, but American intelligence said, no, it's got to be at least 70,000 plus killed. That's the kind of debates you've got. That's orders of magnitude of double. Okay. And I guess the bottom line in all that, though, is so what is General Kavili, the American top commander in Europe, testified before Congress last week saying the Russians have rebuilt all their forces. They are stronger now than they were when they launched the operation in 2022. So regardless of how many Russians have been killed, they've replaced them. That's the real bottom line. That's the so what. The Russians are as stronger now than they have been anytime in this war.
Andrew, curious, because Ukrainian President Zelensky is begging, pleading for more defense systems, for allies to come forward and help. And comparing Ukraine's situation to Israel's right now, is that getting worldwide attention?
Yeah. I mean, yes, you make a great point. It's a huge juxtaposition. Why is the United States and Great Britain, in fact, when the Iranians attacked Israel with those drones a couple of days ago, American and British aircraft assisted in downing those drones. And people are saying, like Kuleba, Ukrainian foreign minister, say, why aren't you helping us? Well, the answer actually is, and no one's officially answered, but I'll give you the analytical answer, is Russia is a nuclear superpower. Iran is not a nuclear power. It's a very different thing to take on the Iranians, you know, in a tit-for-tat with drone downing, than it is Russia when you start engaging a nuclear superpower and you raise the prospects of a third world war and Armageddon and all those things. None of that exists in the case of Iran.
Andrew, we always appreciate you breaking it down and letting us know exactly where our situation is. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks. You have a great weekend. Andrew Rasulis, fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, and Andrew is an expert in Eastern European affairs.